Good morning, everyone. Nice to have you here. Thank you for coming. When I got up last couple of mornings, I felt like this was the rerun or the beginning of the Game of Thrones. Winter is coming. And then Vince gets up this morning in a pair of shorts and a Hawaii t-shirt, and I'm going, come on, Vince, get with the program here. Winter is on its way. Don't be in denial. This morning, we have this series that we are embarking on. Today is part two of a three-part series on the laws of the universe. And the subtitle is Learning How to Lessen Our Suffering, which is interesting. And it's always not a great way to start this morning in deconstructing your own title. But when you think about how to lessen our suffering, for the most part, we don't do that when we know what to do. Right? So when when we know something's going to cause us suffering in the long term, we end up doing it. And the things we should do, we don't do. And the things that we shouldn't do, we do. You with me on that? It's like, I know I want to lose weight, and I go to the fridge, and the ice cream starts talking. Hello? Anybody else have that? Yeah, okay. I'm getting a lot of resonance with that. And then I eat it. And I know it's not going to help me get where I want to be. How many people here know that you should drink water? How many do? Right? A couple of us do, but it's like we don't drink enough, apparently. We're supposed to have like 8. I always go to bed at night knowing that I didn't drink enough. Water, talking about. Right? Yeah. Because I am Tom, and I'm an alcoholic, so yeah, that kind of gives a context for that. And I'm also recovering charismatic, so that's another piece of my history, and that gives context to what I want to say this morning. So I was struck by an article that I found. I was actually watching 60 Minutes, and I went and read about it, and it was about this tower in San Francisco. And one of the things that I take great comfort in is the fact that Calgary is one of those cities that is not really prone to a whole lot of natural disasters. We're not living on a fault line. Yeah, it might get a little bit chilly, but we're not going to be having an earthquake anytime too soon. Those are not pieces of what we're, flooding once in a while. But if you live in High River, for example, hence the name, you might get some flooding, but where we live at the top of COP, so we're not going to be flooded unless it's like a Noah type of flood. So this particular tower was built in San Francisco, and it was it's a very expensive tower. A lot of celebrities live in it, and the penthouse was sold for $9.5 million, and so they were really expensive apartments, which, if you're not the one that bought the penthouse, there's a little bit of humor in this, because they drilled down to build this high tower, and it's 58 stories high, which is taller than the tallest building we've got in Calgary, which is only 52. So it's 58 stories, and it was built, and they drilled down 80 feet to lay the foundation into what the architects described as compressed sand. Just a warning. And the compressed sand has caused this very tall, very heavy building to sink by about 18 inches over the last number of years. And it's not sinking straight. Think Leaning Tower of Pisa, kind of 18 inches to one side leaning. Right? I think it's starting to lean. And now, if you stand on the main drag down in San Fran, you can actually see that this thing is tippling. And they're going to fix it. The building cost $500 million to build, and the fix is $550 million. Maybe they should have drilled down an extra 120 feet to get to bedrock so that they wouldn't have to do a fix, right? And this is a modern-day story of an old story that was taught by Jesus. And Jesus said that when you build a house, make sure you build your house on a rock and not on sand, because it doesn't say if, right? It says when the storm comes, all right? And the human condition, our condition, is that stuff happens in our life that we don't expect and that we don't like, all right? And if you go back over the last 4 or 5 months in your life, personally, how many of you have experienced something that you didn't predict and that you didn't want? That's part of the human condition. Shit happens, right? And the fact that it does tells us that we're part of the human race. It's okay that stuff happens. The question then that Jesus asks us is, where is your house built? It was built on sand. When those stormy times come, is your house, and the house is a metaphor both for your life personally, for your family, for your home, for your larger circle. It's this metaphor of a building that we're building our lives around. And the question is, where are you building? Are you building it on sand? Or are you building it on rock? And then Jesus makes this differentiation between those people that hear what he says and do something about it, and those people that hear what he says and don't do anything about it. And that's the distinction between what he says. So we will lessen our suffering if we hear what's being said and take action on it. That's the context then of today's thought. So let me back the truck up a little bit and give some thoughts around this. So there's two ways of approaching the idea of faith. And the first way is the theological way. And theology, as a way of thinking about faith, spirituality, the Bible, Jesus, our journey, and it doesn't really matter what particular belief system you're out of, a theological way of looking at it really leads us to a place where we're trying to get, and I went back over my church history understanding and some of my notes around that, and it's fascinating when you watch all of the treaties and the creeds and the Nicene creeds and the councils that were held in the first 600 years of Christian history. And there was a lot of them. There was a lot of people trying to get this right. Now, I'm not suggesting that's a wrong idea. It's not like we get up in the morning and go, okay, how can we mess this up? How can we get this wrong? I'm not suggesting that the alternative to right is wrong. It's not. But the idea of theological thinking is that we try to get it right. And when we do so, it can actually lead to it can lead to this idea of a confessional faith. I'm going to use that term, confessional, because the confession is around the statement of belief. And so you will, if you go to most churches, now the Friends Church does not have this, but you will, they somewhere on their website, somewhere on their kind of homepage, will be their doctrine of fundamental and essential truths, their statement of faith. And you're directed there, and that will tell you what's right. Okay? Now, if you agree to everything that's right in their particular perspective, then you can join. If you disagree with anything that's right, then that makes you, hello? It makes you what? Wrong. Right? And if you're wrong, guess what? Are you in or are you out? You're out. And so it becomes a very dualistic way of thinking. Right? So it puts things in terms of black, white, right, wrong, in, out, dualism. And I'm not sure that Jesus was wanting to lead us that way. So let's take a look at an idea of this. And so this is something that I was bumped into this week. And I'm going to say this with no judgment whatsoever, but I'm going to put it up here. Put up John MacArthur's quote. So John MacArthur is someone who would teach around a confessional kind of faith. And there was a group of 12 leaders, and they wrote this statement because they feel like Christianity is losing it, all right? And he says that we affirm that the Bible is God's word, breathed out by him. It is inerrant, infallible, and the final authority for determining what is true. And then he says, what we must believe. Are you picking up the vibe here? Hello? Okay. You can still smile at me. It's okay. I'm not suggesting we are going to sign off on this. I'm just showing you what's here. And what is right and how we must live. All right. All truth, claims, and ethical standards must be tested by God's final word, which is Scripture alone. Now, the feel of that, right? The feel of that, when you read that, what's some of the emotion that you feel when you hear that? Come on, how do you feel? What? Gross, thank you. What else? Yeah, okay, what else? Judged. Fear. Out. Yeah. So it's really clear, right? You know where the dividing line is. That's what you have to believe. All right. What you must do. Now, I don't know about you, but there's something inside of our humanity that kind of pushes away against that. All right. Because to do this, you know, now there's 12 leaders that created this, and they did so. And let me go to the next page. And this is the confessional type of thinking, right? And they say, we deny that Christian belief, character, or conduct can be dictated by any other authority. And we deny the postmodern ideologies. Okay. Let me just pause there for a moment. They're denying basically most of the thinking that's out today. All right. So it's kind of like, okay, we're denying that. No, now just think about that for a second. That's like saying we deny that China exists because we've never been there. Right? They're denying a reality that we have to struggle with and wrestle with, but they don't want to do that. And so what they're saying here is they're now making a false statement, because postmodern ideology does not derive itself from these things, but they're saying it does. From intersectionality, radical feminism, critical race theory, and we are consistent with biblical teaching. Now, intersectionality, just so you understand this. Intersectionality is where it was a study that was started back in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was around black women's experience of men, which, if you think about feminism and racism and the intersection of that and how they experience life, it's really different from, say, a white female and how they would experience life, and a white male and how they would experience life. And the intersection of all this, it's really a different experience of life. And so intersectionality is the study of that. Now, I'm going to suggest to you that empathizing and understanding how people see life sounds to me like the Jesus way. Just saying. Right? It sounds to me that if we could understand how someone sees the world and the idea of feminism, that women are equal with men. Right? That's where that came from. So you only have to go back 100 years. And ladies, 100 years ago, if you were alive, you did not get to vote. That's 100 years ago. So my grandmother was born at that time. She didn't get to vote when she was first allowed to vote, because women were not given the right to own property. They were not equal with men. And feminism has come along and said, wait a minute here. I don't think that's quite right. And women are co-equal with men. Hello? Okay, not at me here. You've all got this blank look on your face, like, really? Like, yeah, 100 years ago. Right? You were not deemed as people. And so feminism came along and said, hey, wait a minute, maybe we need to fix that. And by the way, the church and confessional faith really kept the lid on that for way too long. Women should be seen and not heard, had to wear a covering in church, et cetera, not understanding the context of any of that writing because it came out of a literal, factual reading of the Bible and did a lot of damage culturally, sociologically, culturally, and held us back. It's kind of like the flat earth theory, if I can use that as an analogy. So back in the day, right? So, you know, the earth is flat. We all know that because heaven is up and hell is down, right? You go up to heaven and you go down to hell, which means if you're a Christian in Australia and Canada, you're going to two different places, right? Because of the factual, literal way of reading, right? And so when you get into that, it's like, oh, maybe the world's not flat. Just take a look at the moon or the sun and it might be round, maybe. You know, it doesn't take a lot to figure it out. And here's the interesting, the fascinating piece. 1996, the Toronto Star published an article that says the Vatican has just forgiven Galileo for his theory, right, in 1996. A little late to the party. All right? So this kind of thinking, right, we further deny the competency to teach on any biblical issue coming from any qualification for spiritual people other than a clear understanding and simple communication of what is revealed in Scripture. In other words, them. They're the only people that can teach on this. And anybody else who's got any other understanding, don't listen to them. The fact that they've studied theology all their life, the fact that they've read and reread the Bible multiple times, don't listen to them if they don't agree with us. All right? Now, can you see this confessional idea? All right? As opposed to more of a philosophical way of approaching this. And philosophy is interesting because when we come at it from a philosophical perspective, we invite critical thought. We invite people to challenge us. I may say things today that I disagree with myself. All right? I have done that in the past. I have said things and preached things with intensity and passion, and I think of what I said back then, and I'm going, oh my goodness, you were an idiot. What were you thinking? Well, I was thinking back then, and my thinking wasn't that clear back then. Is my thinking clearer today? Probably not. Right? There's new thoughts that come. There's new ideas that come. There's new ways of seeing and being, etc. And so if we take more of a philosophical approach, the idea that instead of dualism, there's just the right and wrong way, there's all kinds of ways of seeing life. And I know that a community like this, and that's one of the things I appreciate about Friends Church, in a community like this, there's lots of room for conversation and critical thought. You don't have to agree with me, right, to gain something from what I'm saying. And all of us in this room, every single person in this room, has something to give and has something to share. And as we listen to one another, as we have these book studies and these groups, it's about listening and being educated by others. And I believe that as we have that posture of openness, it leads us to a healthier way of being. And notice I don't say a right way of being. I like the word healthy far more than I like the idea of right and wrong, should and shouldn't, ought not. Because then it leads us to a place of health and wellness and openness. And so into this context now, let's take a look at the laws that Jesus was actually talking about. Now, this quote by Oliver Wendell Holmes, one of my favorite quotes, I've shared it here before. But the quote is this, and I would not give you a fig for simplicity this side of complexity, but I would give you my right arm for simplicity on the far side of complexity. Good quote, eh? So when Megan hit that button and brought that quote up, that was a very simple action, right? So your computer, when you open your cell phone, for example, you open your phone, and you look at it, that's a very simple action, right? And so then you press the home button and it opens up. It's a very simple action. What gives value to that simple action is the complexity of all the programming that goes on. You hold in your hand in your mobile device more computing power than they had to go to the moon years ago. There's a lot of computing power in there, underutilized for the most part, but it's there. And it's simple. And it's intuitive, and that's how they design it, so that it's simple and intuitive, so that idiots like you and I can use it, right? And so that simple action has value because of the complexity of the programming. Now, when it comes to faith, to have some simple statement without an understanding of the complexity that we have gone through to get there somehow misses its value. So Jesus, when he was challenged in Matthew 22, he made a statement that I believe sometimes has been undervalued. And the Pharisees came to Jesus and they challenged him. And so they said, Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, which is the other group, if you like. And they said, one of their lawyers, one of the guys that could trick him up, said, okay, what's the greatest commandment? Right? Now, they understood commandments from, like, the first covenant, if you like, the first one, you know, to love God, and then, you know, don't kill, and, you know, don't steal, and don't covet. And the Ten Commandments, I think, are, often misunderstood. I mean, face it, the Ten Commandments really help us just get along with each other. I mean, here's a different kind of spin on the Ten Commandments. It's like, when you come and go from church, come, you know, in your own car and leave in your own car. And by the way, don't take somebody else's wife home with you. Right? And by the way, don't even covet somebody else's wife. Like, be okay with your own. Right? That's really what they're saying. Just get along with each other. And make sure that you drive on the right side of the road, right? So that we get along. That's why law's there, so we get along. It lessens our suffering. If we all just got up in the morning and got creative about how we're going to drive, that would be a disaster, right? We learn to cooperate, and that's why law's there. So law's not bad. It just helps us to get along. And so Jesus then says, thou shalt love God with all your passion, all your intelligence, all your heart. And then love your neighbor as you love yourself. All the law, all 613 laws, all the complexity of that, you gather it all together, pull it together, and it's all summed up in that statement. And so he shifts. There's a seismic shift here that takes place. Now, I want you to watch this. Because when Jesus makes this statement, he shifts everything. Right? Because if you go back to the garden, for example. So you go back to the garden, and in the garden, and this, I recognize this is a metaphor, but there's this beautiful space, and you can do basically whatever you want to do. You can eat from any tree you want to eat from. This is God having a conversation with Adam and Eve, and he goes, look, eat whatever you want. But there's one tree I'd prefer you not to eat from. That's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, at that particular point, don't eat that fruit. As soon as you tell someone not to do something, you have just given energy to that. Right? If you don't think so, you tell one of your kids, don't play with that toy. Right? Or you're walking past a sign that says, don't touch wet paint. You know, don't walk on this grass. Right? And there's something in us that just wants to go. You just want to make sure it's still wet. And in other words, the prohibition against that creates the energy for that. And don't do this, and don't steal, and don't kill, etc. All of those don'ts creates an energy around that. And Jesus comes along and he does this seismic shift. And he gives us, if you like, the law of love. And he goes, okay, I want you to love God with all your mind, all your heart, all your life. Okay? And we're all sitting there going, well, I don't know about you. How do I do that? How do I know I'm right? Well, there's a second commandment that says, love your neighbor, love each other, as yourself. Okay? There was a pastor down in Argentina, and he got up to speak one Sunday morning, and he said, the message today is love one another. And he put the microphone down and sat down. Because, to be honest, we talk too much. Because we think that our faith is about what we believe. You can believe all the right things for the wrong reason. And what you believe is not as important as how you believe. And in this story, about this metaphor of this house, Jesus is saying, look, if you build your house on a rock, then it's about action. That's what Jeff said in the church life. It's about what we do. So the question for all of us this morning is that being inactive in our faith, not loving, and not finding out how we love ourselves. So question for you this morning. Did you all wake up this morning, look at yourself in the mirror, and say this, you're brilliant. My, you're marvelous. You are spectacular. And I love you. Nah, most of you got up and kind of go, eh. Right? We think of all the negative about ourselves. But Jesus is going, you're spectacular. Each and every one of you in this room, you're amazing. You're beautiful. You're brilliant. You add value. And God's just going, I want you to love you. Love yourself. Like truly fall in love with yourself. When you fall in love with yourself, the results of that are spectacular. Because now you're going to love those that are around you in the same way that you love yourself. If you're mad at yourself and you're beating yourself up and you're hard on yourself, then what's the result? You're going to be hard on the people around you. We take it out on those that, it's the isomorphic principle, right? As you treat yourself, you're going to treat others. And so Jesus here is calling us to a law of love. And as, you know, here's the deal. As we age graciously, love every moment. Because it's a privilege not everybody gets to do. Get up in the morning and look at your wrinkles and go, those are spectacular wrinkles. Aren't those fabulous? That says that I've been around for X number of years. And they've got wisdom in them. They've got experience in them. And I love it. Like, think about this. All of you here have screwed up your life at some point. Right? Here's the deal. Love it. Love the fact that you've messed up your life. Love the fact that you're not perfect. Love all of you, not just the good parts. Like, you know, we achieve something, or we run a marathon, or we do this amazing masterpiece, and we love that part of ourselves. But what about all the mess-ups? Can you love the shadow part of yourself? Really? Here's the deal. Let's get honest about this. You've all got a dark side, right? So we get married, and then someone goes, like, who are you? Right? And, like, we fall out of love very quickly. We're going, what? I didn't sign up for this. Well, yeah, you did. Just that we hid the dark side because we knew if we brought the dark side on the first date, we weren't getting a second date. The idea of the first date is to have a second date. So we'll keep the dark side hidden, and we'll keep it suppressed. And we get married, and now we're there. Oh, okay, good. Then the dark side shows up, and your partner goes, whoa. But we got to love that part of ourselves. We got to be okay with that. It's about embracing all of who we are. Love ourselves completely. Right? That means the good, the bad, the ugly, the all of it. And as we embrace that and love that part of ourselves, we're now not hiding. We're not pretending. We can be authentic. We can be real. It's one of the reasons I don't mind introducing myself as an alcoholic. It's part of my story. If it's a drug, I've used it and abused it. And that's part of my dark side. But I embrace that and I hold it close to my heart. And today I choose to be sober. I made it so far today. Aren't you glad I'm not drunk right now? Right? I am intoxicated by love. I'm intoxicated with the faith that Jesus calls me to. I'm intoxicated by the possibilities that we're creating together collectively as Friends Church. That as we love each other and as we express how we believe and we are learning from each other, that creates for us an amazing community that Jesus would say is built on a rock. And when the difficult times come, and they will, we are there for each other. You know, we don't expect a child to die. We don't expect to get divorced. We don't expect someone in our life to betray us. We don't expect those things, but they happen. And when they do, when we live a life of love, and we live by the law of love, and we love ourselves, each and every one of us, we will be able to stand in that. And our house will not fall because we build our life on love. Here's my deal. I'll just be really open about this. I get into all kinds of situations. I work with First Nations up north, and I get into all kinds of situations. I don't know a lot of stuff. I make all kinds of mistakes up there. I am not First Nations. I'm a white guy. And yet I work with them. And Carmen and I, when we do that, what we do is we recognize that when we go and we love, at the end of the day, we win on that one. We may make all kinds of mistakes, but when we do it out of a heart of love, motivated for healing and wellness, we're going to be okay. And our house will stand. Why? Because we love. And Jesus calls us all to build our house on love. That's the law, that on the far side of complexity, we come to that place of, it's really simple. We all get it. Love yourself and love others and love God as you understand God. Right? God as the ground of being. God as event. God as this hyper being. God as mystery. Love Him. Love God. And love yourself and love others. Let's all stand together, shall we? We're going to ask you to do a loving thing before you leave. It's the high holidays of the Jewish community here that we share this space with, and they are going to jam this place with like 800 people later on. And to save time, it takes us about 5 hours to do this. What we need you to do before you leave, and then you're going to love someone, you're going to take your chair and you're going to turn it to face that way. We're going to make these long rows of chairs to face that way. Is everybody cool with that? So it's a very loving thing we can do to apply what's been said today and then give at least 10 people a big hug and tell them your middle name. All right? God bless you.
Glad you're here this morning. Great day to be at Friends Church. And, you know, I see a lot of people returning after a summer of kind of doing their thing and vacation and just a breakaway. I see a lot of new faces. It occurs to me that perhaps we all could use a little reminder about what Friends Church is really about. And so I want to just take a moment to just talk about that. You know, I grew up in a church tradition where really what it was all about was really trying to get people to heaven one day and or to help them stay out of the alternative. And at least underneath all the messaging was really this teaching, these beliefs that they believed you needed to hold to avoid poor alternative and make sure that you end up in a great place. And you'll notice if you've been around a Friends Church very much at all, you'll notice that our focus and our teaching doesn't really sit a lot in that department. We've been captivated by the teaching and the stories of Jesus, probably predominantly. We consider ourselves Christian in that way, in terms of us being influenced, deeply influenced by the teachings and the stories of Jesus. But if you follow the arc of this guy's life, if you follow the things that he talked about so much, the overwhelming majority of the content of his work and his life was talking about here and now, a way of living, a way of talking, a way of interacting with the world that would truly make a positive influence, that would change the world in a positive way. If there was one thing that was symptomatic of Jesus, it seemed like everywhere he stopped, every person he touched, he left them in a better way. That has marked Friends Church right from the beginning. We thought if we could, as a community, be about helping people who don't necessarily fit in maybe a more traditional church environment, consider deeply a spiritual journey that would lead them into a way of living that would change their world positively, that would be a reason why we should give up other work, other job, other stuff to build a community that could do that. If you look carefully at every one of the programs, every one of the ministries here at Friends Church, you will realize that they have been carefully curated and measured and weighed according to their ability to be able to influence people to live in the way of Christ, to make a difference in their world. Sunday mornings, everything we do here is designed to help people live better versions of themselves. So that this week, every opportunity, every encounter, every relationship that you're going to engage in, every time spent with a neighbor or a coworker, leaves a taste in people's mouths that leave them looking and going, I just like being around that. I don't know what it is about that person, but when they walk into the room, they light it up. They don't darken it. I don't know what it is about that guy, but you know what? The way that he listens, or the way that he just refuses to get into that toxic conversation. The way that people spend their money, the way they prioritize their time, the way they engage in the world around them, the way that they look at needs and suffering and how they deal with those situations. We believe that is the deep spiritual work that Jesus was about. And so everything we talk about around here is designed to lead to that end, to challenge you to live, to think carefully about how it is you live when you walk out these doors. I was reading a review this week that a woman wrote about her experience at Friends Church. If you're on Facebook, perhaps you read this, I don't know, but crystallized everything we hope could be done through this thing. She said, Friends Church has changed my life. She said, I never thought I would ever be a regular church goer. Like, ever. But this community cultivates an environment of growth and learning and acceptance, and most of all, of love. Friends is a truly amazing place. I urge anyone and everyone, come and check it out. This community walks the talk when it comes to acceptance. They encourage their community to be the best versions of themselves. They really care about making the world a better place. And I'm proud to be a part of this community. Folks, there is a snapshot of someone who truly understands the heartbeat of this place. If you're new here, maybe you came in, you're kicking your tires, and you heard about Friends or whatever, someone dragged you in here, and you're still trying to figure out what this place is or what it's about, that right there, you cut us. This is the kind of blood we bleed. make the world a better place. Let's become better versions of ourselves. So if you needed a reason to get out of bed on a regular basis to come down here or to tap into the podcast, I just gave you it. This is the gold. And even as this fall, as we engage in all the different programs, we got stuff launching. We got a supper club. We got a book club that's launching this week. We've got a women's group. We've got men's groups. All these different programs are leading to that end. If you want to be a part of it, if you want to be inspired to be better, tie in. Don't be an observer, a concert goer. Be a participator in this vision. All right?